I'm Daisha Clay, host of The Classical Classroom, a show where experts teach me about classical music. I used to know very little about classical music, and now I'd like to think that I know slightly more than very little. What I have learned is that classical music isn't the obscure, static art form that I thought that it was. In fact, it's a dynamic force that's doing amazing things in the world right now. Welcome to a Classical Classroom sub-series, Music Works. We'll go behind the scenes at concerts, hear amazing artist stories, and look at all the ways that classical music is working in the world today. Hey everybody, welcome to a Classical Classroom Music Works episode. I'm Daisha, and hey Jim.
Hi Daisha.
You gotta stop working for a second.
Okay.
So that we can do this interview.
I have no trouble stopping working.
I'm here with Jim Kozak, who is a piano tuner.
A technician.
Yeah. A little bit about Jim. He grew up in Berwyn, Illinois. He plays the piano and pipe organ. Fun fact, he's been a roller rink organist and an organist at pizza parlors. He's now an in-demand piano tuner here in Houston, in addition to tuning our giant piano here in the Geary Performance Studio. He's tuned for organizations like the Houston Symphony, for Decamera of Houston. He's like the house tech at Jones Hall, Wortham Center, and the Hobby Center. Jim, welcome to the Classical Classroom.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me here. Yeah, we've been trying to do this episode for a while, and I'm super excited because this is one of those things that, you know, I feel like we know that people like you exist, but you sort of move in this shadowy classical music underworld.
Where you try to stay out of the light.
Yeah. So tell me first about your sort of personal experience. Like how did you come to be a piano tuner?
When I was 17, that sounds like the start of a song. I started working for a small music store in the Chicago area. And the manager of the store absconded with a bunch of money. It was a little satellite operation. The main store was elsewhere, and I was in this little satellite operation. And so I ended up over that summer between high school and college having to open the store every day and be there until my boss got there. And he would get there sometimes in the afternoon. And a piano sometimes would have to be picked up from there and be delivered someplace. And occasionally there'd be a problem with the piano. And I'm one of those people that if I can see something, I can fix it. You know, I don't understand electronics at all because I can't see everything. I can't watch the electrons running around. But as far as the piano is concerned, you can see everything. And I've got a pretty good analytical mind. And so something would be wrong and I'd fix it. And then I just got interested and I thought, well, let's see if I can try to tune a piano. And back then, I had developed no skills at all in that regard. And I used an electronic tuning machine. It was a strobe tuner. And I remember tuning my first piano. It was a Baldwin upright piano. And it turned out terrible. But then I kept working at it. And the store, then they moved their main store into that neighborhood again, bought a big building, and it had a piano shop in it. Mm-hmm. Well, then piano technicians would come in. There was one guy that used to come in just to restring pianos. Another guy would come in and work on the actions of pianos. And I learned, it's like an apprenticeship almost.
Okay.
And That's how I got started, and I just had a knack for it. And I've done other things. Like, as you said, I played the organ at the pizza parlor and the roller rink. But during that whole time, I kept working on pianos mm-hmm. as well. Then when I moved to Houston, I met a guy. His name is Frank Larkey, and he was the technician for the Houston Symphony at the time. And he'd been doing it for a while, and he was raising a family, and he was tired of working weekends, mm-hmm. kind of is what it boiled down to. And I could walk and chew gum at the same time. And he kind of bequeathed the job at the symphony to me. And everything else came out of that, really.
Wow.
I'd been a piano technician for 10 years at that time. So yeah. I wasn't a complete neophyte.
Yeah.
But then, of course, then it was baptism by fire at the symphony. And I worked very hard to make sure that I was going to stay there. When Christoph Eschenbach became the music director, and he didn't know me from Adam, and he had developed a relationship with a piano technician at an unnamed college here in town. And I was determined that I wasn't going to get knocked out of that position. And so there was a piano there. It was a piano that Ima Hogg donated to the Houston Symphony, and it was in really bad repair. the piano that they were using for solo for the solo instrument wasn't a great piano. Mm-hmm. It was a very good piano, but it wasn't a really great piano, and Eschenbach didn't really care for it. Anyway, so on my own, I went to the old piano and I partially rebuilt it. I put new hammers on it and I restrung part of it and regulated it, and he really liked it. And
nice.
I won.
You did it. That's awesome.
Like I said, everything else has really flowed from the symphony because of the work I do there. You know, De Kammer came my way, and working at the different venues downtown. Uh-huh. And it's really fun, I have to say. You know, I say, you know, I like to stop working, but
I feel like when you were telling me that story about tuning that piano, mm-hmm. I saw like an 80s movie style montage
uh-huh.
of you working on the piano and then you win at the end. That's if you want to go from just a beginner to a pro,
you need a montage. Even Rocky had a montage. I had a mullet back then. No,
oh.
I didn't. No, I didn't. No,
oh,
I didn't. No.
Please.
Never had a mullet, no.
See? That's in my mental movie now. If you fade out, it seems like more time has passed in a montage. You mentioned technician.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between a piano technician and a piano tuner?
Piano tuners would be just someone who just tunes pianos.
Okay.
Doesn't do, and I've known people like that, that if there's anything other than tuning,
mm-hmm.
they have nothing to do with it.
Gotcha.
And that's a way to go. You know, I would find that hugely boring. So beyond tuning, there's, you know, it's a mechanical instrument.
Mm-hmm.
You have 88 little machines. Each key is its own little machine.
Mm-hmm.
And there are points of regulation. There are things, adjustments you can make. There are springs in there that need to be adjusted every now and then. And there are little screws. There are things that stop motion of parts and they limit the travel of parts and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a well-regulated piano has to be looked after. So you can't just tune a piano and expect everything's going to stay working acceptably.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes you get, not complacent, but because you're working on a piano repeatedly, you miss things. And then it takes a pianist to point out something to you. And then you remedy the situation if possible.
Yeah.
There are some things, you have to know the limitations of your instrument. Some instruments have quirks.
Yeah.
And you have to recognize that that's a quirk. And then you have to carefully and politely explain to the pianist, I can't do anything about that because dot, dot, dot.
Right.
Yeah. Like, so a technician gets into more than just tuning.
Gotcha.
There's the mechanical part of it. And then there's also a tonal control. You know, imagine the difference between a marimba mallet.
Mm-hmm.
It's real soft and it produces a round tone. Or a xylophone. It's real hard and it produces a very sharp tone.
Right.
And that's what controls the tonal color of a piano.
Okay.
The hammers, they're made out of felt. It's a really hard compressed felt. And the harder they are, and there are ways to control that, the brighter the sound will be.
Okay.
And that's something you have to take care of all the time as well. You have to look, what is the piano sounding like? Not just pitch-wise, because tuning is just adjusting the pitch up or down.
Yeah.
Voicing is what this other process is called, is controlling the hardness of each individual hammer.
Okay.
And that's what, the harder the hammer is, the brighter the tone of the piano.
I see.
Some pianos you can play and they're very soft and smooth and it's a beautiful dulcet tone, you know, and some of them, particularly like the pianos at Jones Hall, they have to have an aggressive sound.
Mm-hmm.
Jones Hall is a 3,000-seat auditorium. That's big by concert hall standards. It
yeah.
really is. You know, in Europe, concert halls are 1,100. So the pianos at Jones Hall have to be aggressive. They
yeah.
have to be bright and loud, or it's not going to carry in the auditorium.
Have you worked like closely with soloists? Like
the closest I've ever worked with anybody was Alfred Brendel.
Oh yeah.
He did a solo recital at Jones Hall. This uh-huh. is going back, seven, 8 years, maybe even longer than that. And it was the last time he was in Houston. That was a 2-day affair. I had to be there the whole time he was practicing. And he would practice for 45 minutes or so and then call me out there. And it was all voicing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought I had voiced it evenly,
uh-huh.
and it was pretty good. But he was hearing all kinds of little tiny, tiny, teensy, teeny, weeny
yeah.
things. And that went on for 2 days.
Oh, my God.
For 2 days. And it was 7-8 hours a day for 2 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like a tuning
I've never
marathon.
Worked that closely with anybody. He was generous, very nice. He says, you have a very fine piano there now. Now.
Now.
After he had worked
days.
With him. Point, I had customized it for him. And the interesting thing, though, is that the thing about the way Alfred Brendel likes the piano voiced, it's not very, very aggressive when he's done. I had to brighten it up again after he left.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because in Jones Hall, it just didn't, you know, for a solo recital, you can get away with it. But if you're playing with an orchestra, it just wouldn't work.
So you spent like 2 days mm-hmm. getting this to quote unquote perfection.
Yeah.
For
his perfection. Yeah. A soloist, someone that's playing the Tchaikovsky concerto, they couldn't have used that piano.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been heard.
What makes a piano go out of tune?
There are different things. One is just the march of time. The strings are under high tension, and they will, although this doesn't happen much, if the tuning pins are loose, then the pull of the string will start unwinding that tuning pin. But that doesn't happen often. What really makes pianos go out of tune is changes in humidity.
Ah, and this is like one of the most humid cities
it is. That's true. Fortunately, we do have air conditioning. I wouldn't be here talking to you right now if we didn't have air conditioning.
None
I'd be living somewhere
be
else,
here.
Quite frankly.
Yeah.
But it's the consistency of the humidity.
So as the humidity fluctuates, mm-hmm. if the humidity remains constant, whether
great.
It's low or high, mm-hmm. then the strings
that's
stay
what we want.
Tuned.
Exactly. And what causes this is, and this is hard to get this across on radio, the soundboard of the piano, which is the amplifier. That's the when you look underneath the strings, you can see the wooden board underneath that the strings are over.
Uh-huh.
That's what makes the piano speak. If it weren't for that, you couldn't hear it.
Yeah.
That is the amplifier for
okay.
the piano. And what happens is that soundboard is not perfectly flat. It's higher in the middle than it is on the edges.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also being held inside the case of the piano.
Yeah.
And when the humidity goes up, it absorbs moisture and it expands. And it can't expand out. So what does it do? It pushes up against the strings and raises the tension of the strings. And
I
when
see.
The humidity drops, the soundboard drops away from the strings and the pitch of the strings fall.
I see. So as a piano tuner, are you like watching the weather and going, are you like hoping for fluctuations?
You're no.
No. You get to go back out and do more work.
Well,
and
I've got plenty of work, so I don't have to worry about Mother Nature helping
but
me out.
But if I were a beginning piano tuner, would I be sitting home watching the weather report going, oh, come on, fluctuate?
I don't know. Like, well, you know, we have air conditioning. It really
It doesn't.
The thing is that a piano that's wildly out of tune
uh-huh.
is essentially untunable. It's an old saw that you can't tune a way out of tune piano.
Yeah.
And what it is you have to make more than one pass through the piano to okay. get it up to pitch and then go back again and do it carefully. It's called a pitch raise when you're just pulling the whole thing up. And you work rapidly and you're not very careful. You just want to get it up to where it's supposed to be. And then you go back and go over it carefully. And sometimes it takes 3 times.
Wow.
And when that happens also, it destabilizes the piano.
Yeah.
And it's you don't want to be doing that right before a performance because the tuning is not very solid.
Uh-huh.
It's easy for the pianist to knock it out under those circumstances.
Okay. Are you on sort of standby, like during performances? Are you...
Only if asked. Our standard, before the first rehearsal, I'll tune it and then meet with the soloist afterward. And if there's anything that they need me to do on the piano.
Yeah.
Usually they say, no, it's fine the way it is because pianists are very flexible people. And they're also, most of the ones that I know are very generous.
Yeah.
And there's got to be an insurmountable problem before they really make a big deal out of it. But some of them can say, could you do a little voicing here? Could you do a little voicing here? I think there's some repetition problem. It's hard to, you know, to play a note repeatedly very fast. And could you just check that? And,
uh-huh.
and that's it. And then they'll say, thank you. And I probably won't see them for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah.
But then I tune before every rehearsal and before every performance. Let me tell you, I think probably the most harrowing story, because, you know, people like that. An English orchestra. I can name names because this doesn't reflect badly on the orchestra or the conductor. And it was a pianist conductor. It was Vladimir Ashkenazy.
Uh-huh.
World renowned.
Yeah.
A brilliant pianist and brilliant conductor. Anyway, so I had worked on the piano earlier that day. The orchestra loaded into Jones Hall. And then I came back because I had to tune it again after the rehearsal. And I was sitting in the stage manager's office. And you can hear everything there. And so I'm sitting there. And so they start the concerto. Of course, the orchestra starts. And then the piano comes in. And he plays, 10, 15 measures. And everything stops.
and he starts doing this. And he says, Do you hear that? And he's talking, he's playing stuff on the piano and talking to the orchestra. Well, I'm melting into a puddle because I'm going to have to face him after this and ask him what I... And the members of the orchestra start criticizing the piano too. And it's killing me. It's just killing me. Even my heart is racing now, even just talking about it, because I knew I had to face him. I was a much younger man than I am now. Now that wouldn't bother me. It would get me a little bit, but not like it did then. I just wanted to crawl into a hole. Anyway, when I did talk to him after that, he couldn't have been nicer. And he said, "It's not you." He said, "It's just that this particular piano, I don't care for it, you know." But he had to play it. But that was terrifying. I was absolutely terrified.
So I'm interested. I'm envisioning you coming in, and I've seen you do this in the studio before, uh-huh. And you strap your goggles on, you've got your,
have goggles.
No, you totally have goggles. That's what, you get in there, and you, so is it kind of like, what you're doing, is it sort of like a really, really complex tuning of a guitar? Is it kind of similar to that? Like, can you show me, like, how you tune? I'm going to come over there and see, like...
Well, we start... Actually, I don't know if the microphone is picking that up. That's A440. That's that note. So that's where I start. I start with that one note. And then I tune an octave down, and I get this A, which is A220.
Yeah.
And that number means how many times per second the string vibrates from side to side, all the way around. It cycles 220 times a second, and that gives us that pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, then I tune using intervals. Down a fifth, up a fourth, down that fourth, and I get a minor third. And can you hear the fluttering there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's called a pitch beat.
Okay.
That is a differential in frequencies between certain partials, harmonics of the two notes.
Okay.
And I want that to be beating at a certain speed, and that's about right.
Okay.
And then I can get into this, and it can be really boring. But then I use different intervals, fourths, fifths, thirds, and sixths, and I will get the tuning correct on this one octave. From D below middle C to D above middle C.
So now you've got this tuning fork.
Mm-hmm.
You've got this big, weird, wooden-handled thing.
Tuning lever.
Tuning lever. Exactly what I was going to say. And you are putting it over, and I'm going to take pictures of this mm-hmm. for you guys so that you can go to our website and see pictures of what he's doing. So you're taking this wooden-handled thing,
mm-hmm.
which you said the name of.
Tuning lever.
Tuning lever. And you're putting it over these little knobby things that are inside
pins.
The tuning pins. Okay. They're sort of these like silver things that are sticking up inside of the piano. And you've put this over, and that's how you're like actually moving the strings tighter or looser,
depending upon what I need to be doing.
Got it. And you do that. Is there like one string per key? How does that work?
The lowest eight note. Now this is a Steinway Model D Concert Grand. The lowest eight notes on this piano are a single string, the ones down here. Then the next five notes have two strings.
Okay.
Those are two strings. And then from the rest of the piano, it's three strings per note. What's different in the bass and the treble, the bass of the piano, the lowest 20 notes is a steel string. And as you can see, it's got copper wrapped around it.
Yeah.
The reason for that is to try to slow down the vibrations of the string. When you play a particular note like this A440, to make it an octave lower, theoretically, you have to double the length of the string to make it an octave lower, to be the A below. And then you have to double it again for the A below that. This piano would be ridiculously long if we actually did that. What ends up happening is on the plain steel strings, which is the top 68 notes,
uh-huh.
as you start getting down to that F, which is the lowest plain steel string,
mm-hmm.
the tension starts dropping.
Okay.
And then when you get into the bass, the tension picks up again because now we're wrapping them in copper.
Okay.
But it's done because we can't have, I think it's, what would it be?
a 45-foot piano. That's just impractical. Someone has done it. It's been done.
I'm sure.
You know, the German people, of course. You know, all the technical prowess.
Yeah.
Anyway, but then it's three to the top.
Okay.
From starting on that B flat to the top of the piano. And now on smaller pianos, this disposition of where the copper wound strings start is different.
Okay.
And on most concert grands, this is kind of what it is. Mm-hmm. Some Bechsteins, I think there are 19 bass notes instead of 20. And it's just arranged a little differently.
Do you use an electronic tuner?
No.
Or do you just use your ear?
Tuning fork in my ear.
And why is that? Like, I'm assuming other people choose the electronic tuner. Why do you go that route?
Well, first of all, I've been doing this since I was 17, and I'll be 61 in the fall. So a long time ago, all we had for electronic tuning was those strobe tuners.
Yeah.
And pianos have something called inharmonicity. What it ends up being is there's, again, if I stop me if I'm getting too technical. Each individual note is not just made up of one pitch. It's many pitches.
Okay.
There's it's the harmonic series. The lowest of them is the actual pitch of this note. This is the A220 note. Then the next note in the harmonic series is an octave. It's an octave higher. When you're tuning that octave, of course, this note's not in tune yet. That's why it sounds terrible. What you're actually doing is you're tuning the lowest note in the harmonic series of the upper note to the second lowest note of the lower note.
Okay.
It's the same pitch. You can't tune 440 to 220.
Mm-hmm.
What you're ending up doing is you're tuning 220 to 220.
Okay.
Or actually, you tune 440 to 440 when you tune this octave. But what happens is because of the high tension of the string, that I said the first one is it's called the fundamental. It's the lowest note in the harmonic series. The second one, that octave, is a little, because of the stiffness of the wire, it's a little bit higher than an octave.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly 220. It's a little, it's 220 and change. It depends on the piano exactly what that is. So when you're tuning an octave and you're making it sound clean and pure, you're actually, it's a little bit bigger than an octave.
Okay.
Other instruments don't do that.
Huh.
Pipe organs don't do that. Guitars don't do that. Harpsichords don't do that. And so when you're tuning a piano, if you tune by ear, you automatically compensate for that stretch. If you're using that machine, that's absolute.
Mm-hmm.
That's modern equal temperament. Temperament is the distance between the notes.
Right.
And that machine, the old ones that did that, it didn't take that octave stretch into account. Now there are computer programs that will do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
You calibrate the program for a particular piano, and you can do it all with the machine now.
Mm-hmm.
But the software is expensive.
Yeah.
You can get an app for your iPhone. But I learned to do it by ear. This is the way it's been done for centuries.
Yeah.
You learn to count beats, and you learn what the different intervals are supposed to sound like. And so it's in my head.
Yeah.
I don't need that. You know?
Well, and it's also important to fight the good fight and keep the robots from taking over.
Well, there is that.
I appreciate that about you.
Well, the thing also is that even if you have the machine that can do a great job telling you where to set the pitch of the notes, there are other factors involved. You can't point to anything. You can start showing somebody how to do that, but it really, you've got to get in there and you have to start doing it, and you have to do a lot of very bad tunings until you start developing the skill with the tuning lever and making sure that when you get done with a note, that the string stays where you put it.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do. That was the hardest thing to learn how to do.
Does tuning affect the pressure of the keys? Like
No.
So the relationship of the strings being tight or loose has no effect
The piano is basically in two pieces. There's the action, the mechanical part, and then the musical part, the metal frame, which is called the plate actually, and then the soundboard in the case of the piano, the body of the piano. There are two screws that hold everything around the keyboard in place. I can take those out, and I can just slide the keyboard out. It comes out like a drawer.
Huh.
And it has to be that way so I can access it easily and work on it.
Yeah.
So, the tension of the strings has nothing to do with that. What makes the key feel heavier or lighter, you know, how much effort you have to put into it, is the weight of the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
The key is basically a teeter-totter.
Yeah.
And you're the skinny kid on this side, and there's the fat kid on the other side. And there are weights in the keys that help you overcome that. So adjusting the weights in the keys that are on your side of the teeter-totter helps you play the note without having to expend a lot of effort.
Yeah. I think you should make an instructional video, like Sesame Street style, with animations for the how to do this for, you know.
Except I want Brad Pitt to stand in for me.
That could totally happen. Can we please make this happen?
Because we look so much alike.
Yeah, I was going to say. So if I am a person who is getting into piano tuning and I am, how do I get into this? Like, what do I do?
Well, there's a national organization called the Piano Technicians Guild.
Uh-huh.
You need to find your local chapter, mm-hmm. and you need to go there and introduce yourself and mm-hmm. explain what you're doing. They are an education-oriented organization, and you can get instruction. There are conventions. You can go, and there are classes at conventions. And then you also need to get yourself affiliated with a music store.
Okay.
Well, obviously one that sells pianos. And you're going to work cheap. And you're going to start by tuning pianos on the sales floor.
Yeah.
And you're going to tune and tune and tune and tune. And then through the Piano Technicians Guild, you're also going to learn how to work on the piano action. And then start learning something about voicing. But mm-hmm. just like anything, you know, you can read all the books you want about cooking.
Yeah.
You can read recipes. You can know every ingredient in the recipe until you get in the kitchen and you pick up that mixing bowl and the spoon. You don't know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so you have to get experience. And the best, the easiest place to do it is to go to work for a music store. That's what I did. And that's what pretty much everybody does.
Well, Jim Kozak, thank you so much for being on the Classical
Classroom.
Thank you
for having me.
It's been really cool to talk to you.
I really enjoyed it.
Now I know what you're doing in here all the time.
You must explain it to me.
We're so glad that we have you to keep this piano
in
shape.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I love this.
All right, everybody. That about does it for this episode of Classical Classroom Music Works. For more Classroom, go to HoustonPublicMedia.org/classroom. You can find us on SoundCloud and iTunes and on your Stitcher and TuneIn apps virtually everywhere. See what I did there? Remember to rate and review us however you listen. You can also keep up with us on Twitter and Tumblr or email me at dclay@HoustonPublicMedia.org. Thanks to audio producer Todd TunedIn Holslander for twiddling knobs. Thanks to Program Director St. John Flynn for challenging my feelings about personal space every day. Thanks to Editor Mark DiClaudio for his piercing Senpaku eyes. Thanks to our brand new intern, Nick Dolworth, for his great hair and abiding love of the khaki pant. Thanks to composer George Heathcoe for the theme music to Music Works. Thanks to Jim Kozak for being here. Thanks to me for saying words. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.